The following program is an MLWRadio.com production.
You remembered them fondly, and then they were gone. And now you want to know who, what, where, when, why.
We having fun, yeah.
Why It Ended with Robbie E. and Matt Coon. And here we are finally on Why It Ended with Robbie E. Robbie, we've been pimping this out. We've been talking about it. We've been promoting it. How do you feel? Our first show.
Hey, you know, I know everyone out there is probably thinking, Matt, you even were thinking that it's insane that I wanted to do a podcast when we first talked. And, you know, everyone has podcasts, and I just wanted to do something different. And, bro, the past week, it's been kind of buzzing. Everyone is asking, like, what it is, what it's about. Like, this has actually picked up a little buzz, and I think everyone is going to be satisfied with this first episode because we got a great guest. I mean, no one knows Glacier's story. Hell, I don't even know Glacier's story, and now we're going to find out what it is.
And Glacier is the perfect Why It Ended guest because he was at the forefront at the largest watching audience in wrestling history, and then he was gone. And his story, he got such a big push, and then all of a sudden, not so much, and we finally get to find out why it ended. What do you want to find out today, Robbie?
Like, the point of this show is just for guys where when you hear their name, you say, oh yeah, I remember him, and you just kind of don't see him around that often, and I'm everywhere between wrestling shows and conventions, and Glacier is a guy, I know he actually is still active in some places, but still, like, he's not around as much as he probably could be or should be, and I just feel a lot of people don't know his story. So I just want to hear, like, how Glacier came about, how it ended, and what he's been doing the past 18 years.
Well, you're definitely going to hear it right after this. You are listening to Why It Ended with Robbie E. Make sure to subscribe on iTunes. You can do it right now. Give us a 5-star review or visit us on Twitter and throw us a follow at Why It Ended, or follow Robbie E. at Robbie E. Impact, or Matt Coon at Matt Coon Music. This is Why It Ended with Robbie E. Thank you for joining us on our very first episode. And of course, today on Why It Ended with Robbie E., we are joined by Blood Runs Cold Glacier. How's it going there, Glacier?
Hey, good, guys. Thank you for having me on.
Hey, no problem, man. And I just wanted to say thanks for doing this. You are a perfect guest for our show, for our first show. And I'm super excited about this interview because there's a lot of things I've been reading up on you about. And, like, I want to hear some of these crazy stories it seems like you have lived through, man.
Absolutely, man. Absolutely.
And you know what's funny, Matt? I actually, me and Glacier about 2 months ago did a little something together in Connecticut, and I went up to him afterwards and I said, hey, did you start your training career at the power plant? And he told me how he was wrestling for like 10 years before that. And I had no clue of that. And that is why I think this interview is going to be so interesting to me. And I think a lot of people are going to be interested to hear your story, and they probably don't know it.
I hope so.
Glacier, do you want to be called Glacier or Ray, or what do you prefer to be referred to as?
It doesn't matter. Whatever's easiest for you guys. Seriously.
Wait a minute. Are you telling me your real name isn't Glacier?
Let me back up on that. Yeah, of course it is.
Well, of course, Glacier was a longtime wrestling fan.
Yeah.
He grew up idolizing the Briscoe brothers.
Yeah.
And wanted to be a wrestler. You were trained by Fred Avery in Georgia. And you were in this Georgia territory, which spawned a lot of careers. Scotty Riggs, Buff Bagwell, Disco Inferno. And you were named, which is weird because your name is Glacier. You were named Sugar Ray Lloyd by Tommy Rich.
Yeah.
How did that come about?
What happened was Tommy called me one weekend. It was a weekend. And he called me and he said, hey, he said, I want to, you can only do it. You got to do it in a Tommy Rich voice. He's like, hey, I'm going to give you a new ring name. And I was like, okay. And I'm thinking, I'm freaking out because I'm talking to Tommy Rich on the telephone because I grew up watching Tommy. And and he says, from here on out, we're going to call you Sugar Ray Lloyd. And at that point, Sugar Ray Leonard was pretty popular as a boxer. You know, there was Sugar Ray Robinson before him. And so it's like, I literally remember saying to him, and in this PC world we live in this day, I hope I don't make anybody mad by saying this. I said, okay, Tommy. I said, well, I guess I'll be the first white Sugar Ray. he goes, yeah, we'll go with that. And I was like, okay. You know, so, and then it just kind of stuck because Tommy wouldn't let it die.
After being nicknamed Sugar Ray Lloyd by Wildfire Tommy Rich, you kind of caught on with this Southern Championship Wrestling, which actually Dave Meltzer said at one time was turning into a pretty hot promotion. You guys would use a lot of the WCW enhancement talent like Joel Deaton and Randy Barber, but also you'd bring in Tommy Rich. But I think you also shared a couple cards with Bruiser Brody. Is that correct?
Tommy went to bat for me with Jerry Blackwell in Southern Championship Wrestling. And it's those sacrifices like that I look back on now and I go, man, I hear people talk about, you know, making sacrifices and traveling and whatever. I was teaching school. They filmed their TV. They filmed a month's worth of TV every Sunday evening, started around 7 o'clock, didn't end up finished about 11 or 12 at night. After the taping on Sunday night, I'd drive all the way back to Valdosta, get home around 4 or 5 o'clock, sleep an hour or so, get up and go teach school on Monday. And, you know, back then I didn't think anything of it, you know.
That I remember when we were talking, because you were a phys ed teacher, right?
Yeah.
Well, I have my degree in phys ed and I taught phys ed.
That's
also.
Right. My
second year of teaching, before I resigned, I started with Impact. And I would do live TV on Thursday nights and then fly home Friday morning, have someone cover my first class, and just go right into school by like 8, 9 a.m. I'd take the first flight out and I would make it and do 3/4 of the day. So I was kind of, you know, different, but I mean, kind of the same thing. I was wrestling and doing it. It was insane.
Yeah, you know, but the thing is like, you know, you don't think you just go, okay, well, I'll make it work, you know?
Yeah, that's it.
But I look back on it now. God, I tell you, Matt and Robbie, I mean, I was walking in that locker room. And yeah, I remember the first day I ever saw Bruiser Brody, and this is right before, you know, the bad stuff happened with him over in Puerto Rico. But the roster was literally these are the guys I can think of off the top of my head that were there. Eddie Gilbert, of course, he had Missy Hyatt within them. Terry Taylor, Bob Orton Jr., Dick Slater, of course Tommy, Bob Armstrong, Paul Heyman was there as Paul Lee Dangerously, Abdul the Butcher, of course. You know, like I said, it was Jerry Blackwell's territory. Randy Rose, who's one half of the original Midnight Express. I mean, that level of talent that, man, I was scared to death.
Matt, they would have beat the crap out of you in that locker room. You know that?
Oh, my God. Dick Slater alone scares me, just the name.
Oh, yeah. There was a tag team tournament they paired me up with. As a matter of fact, I have this great picture it was in a magazine. It's a picture of me and a very young Jeff Jarrett tag team and doing a double drop kick on a guy named Nick Busick back in the day. And I mean, it's just like Jarrett had this long hair. I mean, we both look like children of the 80s, you know, but because that was maybe summer of 88, I guess, maybe 89. That was one of my first lessons in real pros who knew how to do this business at a high level. And all I had to do was just hang on and not screw up.
So, yeah, and stay alive. I mean, at least you're still alive, right?
Absolutely. I survived it.
So at this time, 88, right before 89, of course, like Robbie said, a lot of people just think Glacier was someone who dropped from the sky, but you'd been wrestling for a while. What was your dream like? You're definitely sacrificing a lot. You're teaching, but also at the same time, you're working every weekend against some of the best in the world. You must have had some kind of dreams or goals or aspirations for your wrestling career.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, at that point, Valdosta, Georgia was in South Georgia. And at that point, Florida, you know, championship wrestling from Florida was kind of, it was going through a period where it was kind of dying down, but Georgia championship wrestling was still strong. And then it was in that, you know, that phase of becoming, you know, WCW. And so, you know, that was my goal is I wanted to work for the NWA and I wanted to live in Atlanta and I wanted to be a part of all that. And then, of course, it became WCW. And I was like, okay, this is where, you know, I mean, I'm 4 hours from my dream. So in 1990, that's how I split up with my tag team partner. I said, look, man, they're not going to come to Valdosta and find us and knock on our door. We got to go there. So I applied for a teaching position and got a position in Marietta, Georgia. And I moved. He didn't. And, you know, my career went on to be what it was. And 2 years later, not even 2 years later, he was out of the business.
Did the family think you were insane for like moving and switching teaching jobs and everything, or were they supportive?
Oh, they just to get into wrestling, they thought it was insane, you know, because, you know, my dad loved it, of course, but my mom, you know, she was never a fan of wrestling. She literally said to me, she said, you're going to college on a scholarship and now you're doing what? And I was like, yeah, I'm the youngest of the twins. Even by 12 minutes, she still always considered me the baby.
I am so shocked Eric Bischoff did not do a twin glacier gimmick at some point.
Oh.
Oh, my God. Two glaciers.
And I beg my brother, even though we're fraternal, we still look enough like we could have pulled some stuff off.
The Hebners did it. You could do it.
Yeah. He just wasn't into it.
Your brother's dream is to be a state trooper, and your dream was to be a wrestler. And it's funny, the revisionist history of the WWE is that everyone wanted to go north. But you just said you moved to Georgia to catch on with WCW. And in 1989, you were signed as some kind of enhancement talent, and you had your first match against Hacksaw Butch Reed. How did that come about? Who talked to you? Who signed you? What were the expectations?
Once again, Tommy Rich. Tommy Rich was the one who went to bat for me with the people there, at TBS. And it's whenever I see Tommy, I mean, you hear all the stories about Tommy, the good, the bad, and the ugly.
I've heard a few.
But it was my first experience with a guy that big who was a real professional who knew how to hit a move and make it look great without absolutely breaking somebody in half. And from that point, I was hooked. And then Tommy called me and said, hey, they like what you did. Come up to Atlanta for TV later this week at the center stage. And I went to that. And my second match was, against Gary Hart and the Great Muta.
So these were just per appearances. You weren't signed to a contract yet?
No, not at all. I was just like your typical, enhancement talent. I was just, they called and I'd go.
Gotcha. And do whatever they say, right?
Yeah, and show up and sit in the corner and just wait for your name to be called. Yeah.
But the plan, as you saw it, was to kind of move from enhancement talent to somehow getting on the other side of it, right?
Yeah, and what's funny is Nick Patrick. I remember getting to know Nick way back then, and I just remember him saying to me one time, he said, when everybody calls everybody kid, and he's like, hey, kid, listen, don't worry about it. He said, if your break ever comes, trust me, no one will ever remember any of these matches. And then years later, about halfway through the glacier run, I was sitting at one of the hotel bars having a beer, and Nick and I ended up talking, and I told him, and I said, And he goes, yeah. He goes, I brought it up, and he said, yeah. He said, I don't really remember saying that, but I can imagine that I would say something like that to you back then. And I said, to this day, I said, the only person who's ever brought that up to conversation, he's like, who? I said, me and you, man. No one's ever brought up me doing a job match for anybody, And he goes, see, I told you.
Hey, to go back real quick to Muta, because your experiences with him seemed a lot better than mine, because when I had got missed from him, I've gotten missed from a lot of different people, but whenever it was from him, it wouldn't come off me for like 3 days. Yeah. Did you have that same problem?
You know what, Robbie? Thank God I didn't get the missed ever, but I came close. The first match, we're standing off camera, at the center stage in Atlanta, and I'm watching them, and Gary Hart went over everything with me that we were going to be doing. I never talked to Muta, not once.
Oh, my God. The first time I wrestled him, his young boy, I had the same situation. I talked to his young boy and not him. That's hilarious.
How crazy is that? But he went and he had, I just have to tell this exactly what I saw, was because during the match, he comes out near his entrance. Of course, I get no entrance. I'm just out there. And he comes out and he spits green. And he had his face kind of done white. He spits green. And then he reaches down and he acts like he's kind of like messing with his throat a little bit. And then he spits red. And he spits it straight up in the air. And, the way that he did it was he had two Dixie cups back there, one with green, one with red. And he actually had, a non-lubricated condom. And they cut the top off of it, poured it in there, tied it up. He put it in the side of his mouth. He poured the green in and went out. And I hope he never gets mad at me for exposing how he did that. I'm sure it's pretty simple if you think about it. But he just, thank God he spit it straight up in the air and he didn't spit it at me.
This is officially the coolest podcast in the history of podcasting. I'm listening to two guys comparing notes on Muta. Yeah. And now we find out that he does not actually have magical powers where he can just emit mist.
I know. He's really gonna kill me now.
Glacier, you have ruined it for like so many people right now. It's like there's no real Santa Claus. Like you killed it for everyone.
I know. I need to go hide.
You ran into Nick Patrick years later. And of course, years later, let's take you to 1996. You have a good friend named Diamond Dallas Page.
Yeah.
And Diamond Dallas Page was someone that you kind of had a conversation with about how you were going to try to incorporate your martial arts into wrestling. and then he put you in touch with Bischoff. And the word is you had a 3-hour meeting, and at the end of it, you were signed. Your dream came true. Is that pretty much how it happened?
When you talk about that meeting with Dallas, we were Christmas shopping. It was December 23rd, 1995. I mean, I know it to the day. And we were actually shopping at the big mall in Lenox Mall in Atlanta. Kimberly was with us. Her parents were in town. So she goes off one way with them, and me and Paige are doing some shopping. We stop at a California Pizza Kitchen that's on the upper level of the food court. And we're sitting there and we're talking. And I said to Paige, I said, you know, Paige, I said, I'm thinking about adding some martial arts stuff to my wrestling gimmick. And Paige's got a mouthful of pizza, and he just says, bro, that'd be great if you knew some of that crap. Of course, if you know Paige, he didn't say crap. He said something else. And I said, what do you mean, man? I said, you've heard me talk about it. I said, yeah, I've studied martial arts since I was a kid. He's like, bro, I didn't know that. And I was like, well, how in the heck did you not know? So he goes, well, you know, but he goes, Bischoff's into all that stuff. And I said, well, I didn't know that. So he tells me a little bit more about that. I tell him, you give him a detailed rundown of everything that I've done. And he goes, bro, let me get all this information to Bischoff. Because at the time, Paige was trying to help me. He really was trying to help me get in. But, you know, it's like anything else. Timing is everything. And so he goes to Bischoff. He tells him everything. At this point, they did live. They lived maybe only about 3 houses from each other at this time. And so he tells Paige, all right, look, let's get through the holidays. First week of January, I want to sit down with him. So he tells Paige that he's going to be eating dinner at this little steakhouse right outside their neighborhood. He's sitting in the back of the restaurant. I go sit down with him. And the conversation goes for maybe, it was almost 3 hours. And I remember,
Did you know him at all before then?
No, I had never met Eric.
And you walked in and he was just alone?
Yeah, he was just alone. Just as
so were you, like, were you super nervous going into it?
Oh my God, Robbie, it was, you can't even imagine. But it was one of those things where, and this was it. But, you know, the funny thing about it was, because I guess it was in that kind of atmosphere, we ordered dinner, there was a lot of small talk. You know, it just didn't feel, I eased in pretty quickly, you know. And I remember thinking, well, you know what, it's just dinner. You know, if he's interested at all, then maybe we'll have an official meeting after this. Maybe this is just for him to kind of feel me out, see if it's anything worth messing with on his end. Like, that's kind of the way I took it, you know. But then he starts really grilling me. Not like it was a test, but we start talking martial arts. I didn't realize, but he was very much into martial arts. He was very much into tournament karate. Once he started throwing names out to me and I knew who these people were and we could have conversations about these people, then he knew I wasn't just some fly by night guy, you know,
took
10 lessons and claimed he knew, you know, martial arts. And so it actually turned into, I almost at points forgot who he was as far as his role. I was just having a great conversation with a guy about wrestling and martial arts and everything. I didn't think at that moment I was going to get offered anything, but I remember thinking, I'm not just going to take some, you know, BS deal because I'm not walking away from what I have. I have a pretty good life right now. He looks over at me and he says, Ray, he said, I like what I hear. He goes, I've got some things in the works. At this time, I had no idea what he was talking about. But what it was TBS had a big hand in the Mortal Kombat, you know, the production of the Mortal Kombat movie. They were getting ready to put out this Mortal Kombat TV series on TNT or TBS or whatever. So they had come to WCW, come to Eric and said, hey, can we take this concept and bring it into the wrestling ring? Can we capitalize on it? He didn't really tell me a lot that night, but he just basically said, you know, I like what I hear. I want to sign you to a contract to wrestle for WCW, literally just like that. And I said, I literally was like, wait a minute, I just hear what I thought I heard. You know, and I'm thinking, oh, he just signed me to some developmental contract, you know, for $300 or $400 a week or something. But I was still open to whatever he was offering, you know, just to hear it. And he said, I got some big plans. He said, and I said, is this like a contract? Or, and he said, yeah. He said, this is a real deal. And I was like, wow. And he says, let me ask you something. He said, are you still wrestling on the independent scene? And I said, yes, I am. He said, well, I want you to call and cancel all your wrestling bookings. He goes, I want you to simply disappear from the independent wrestling scene for the next few months. And I was like, I'll never forget saying to him, I looked right at him, and he laughed when I said, I remember saying, I can do that.
I think I can make that happen. Did you say real happen, contract? You know? I think I can make that happen.
Is there anything more Eric Bischoff than paying somebody not to wrestle?
Exactly. what I was soon to find out was he was doing a lot of that, you know. But and his whole thing was just disappear. I just want you to disappear.
How many years was that contract for?
Initially, once I actually met with them and I saw the contract, it was 3 years, 3 year contract. So yeah,
wow.
You know, and so
life,
you
know, and is like, good.
Yeah, exactly. It was good. But I go back to the fact that, and that's when I actually was friends with the guy named Andre Frides, who was a special effects artist, who I introduced him to Eric. And once Eric got to know him, he hired him to be the one who actually create the four looks for all of us. And so we would have these, this is what Eric seemed to really love, was we started having these meetings. This was in the infancy of the internet. So, you know, we were able to really keep a lot of it more quiet than you would be able to today. And we would have these, what we called midnight meetings, where like Eric would meet at Andre's studio and Dallas would be there. And at, you know, after it got to be, well, we knew it was going to be Ernest and it was going to be Brian Clark and Chris Canyon. You know, we had the midnight meetings. I'll never forget it. It was the coolest thing because, you know, Eric usually come up on his motorcycle and, you know, it was just, and we'd have these secret meetings. And so the first several months, that's all we did. You know, and then Eric didn't even want to set the power plant at first. He didn't want anybody to have any inkling of who it was that was going to be, especially who was going to be the first guy. So, yeah, I mean, I was still training and staying in shape because I knew this was it. I mean, this is my big shot. And but you know, and then of course it went into become what it became, and all the pros and cons of that.
It's funny that you said all that because I'm going through all these old observers and I'm researching it and I'm thinking that Meltzer doesn't know what the hell he's talking about because he says, at one point he says, you know, the blood runs cold.
Are you just figuring that out?
Well, here's the thing though. The blood runs cold promo start in spring 96. Wrestling was never hotter. Everybody was anticipating them. And Meltzer reported at one point it was a futuristic martial arts team. Another time he said it might refer to the impending arrival of Hall and Nash. Then he said it had nothing to do with Hall and Nash. It had to do with three ninja superheroes, one supposed to be Brian Clark. And then another point, they said that it might involve Hakushi. Another point, it might involve Yoshi Kwan, Chris Champion. But what you're saying is the initial Blood Runs Cold may have just been a faction already of you and Brian Clark and Canyon and Ernest Miller. Is that what the initial idea was?
Oh, yeah. And as far as I know, there were never any other – I mean, that's who – Dallas helped Eric pick. I mean, Eric already wanted Ernest Miller because something that most people don't know. Ernest was the martial arts teacher to Eric's kids, his son and daughter. And so he had this relationship with
Ernest. You want to wrestle? You want to wrestle on TV?
Yeah, hey, you want to be a wrestler? Cool. You know, that's literally how it happened.
Here's a 3 year contract.
Yeah, so, you know, and so that's how Ernest got in.
The Blood Runs Cold vignettes got everybody's attention. They were really well produced. And I guess what you're saying, it was supposed to be the four of you coming out.
Yeah.
But then something happened, Robbie, July 7th, that I think changed everything. And that was the Bash at the Beach with Hulk Hogan. And I think that kind of delayed everything.
Yeah, you know, I always say, you know, I was talking to somebody about this recently, is the whole Mortal Kombat thing and the Blood Runs Cold thing was a great idea when it first was conceptualized back in the early 96. By the time it finally hit the audiences, NWO had happened, and let's face it, everything in WCW took a backseat to that, everything. So what was a good idea at the beginning of the year had already been a not-so-great idea by the time we finally debuted. I remember that Canyon and I, we were supposed to go down to Daytona, we were supposed to be there, and at the last minute, they told us not to come down. I mean, that's how close we were to debuting this thing. And I remember we were watching that Sunday night when Hulk turned heel. And I never forget, we were both staring at the TV. I'll never forget, Canyon does not even look at me. He just says, "Well, there goes our push."
Yep. That was when I was slowly getting back into wrestling, because there was a year or two when I was in middle school when I was too cool for it. So I was like out of wrestling, but that actually, Hogan turning is like kind of like the start of when, for me, wrestling was getting cool again.
Then they started playing the vignettes again, and at some point it changed from the faction into just Glacier. How did that happen?
Eric said, "Guys, don't worry about it. Everything's still cool. We're going to, you know, we got to make a few adjustments. I mean, but everything's still a go." And
the good news is, I mean, you're still getting paid at the time, right?
Absolutely. And here's the thing. It went on to be, you know, we still got a good run out of everything. We were solid mid-card during what was arguably one of the greatest rosters of all time. And I stayed employed almost right up until the very end.
I never knew about that it was supposed to be all of you debuting together. And I'm thinking of, like, four Mortal Kombat guys coming out. And I, like, that would have been freaking awesome. Like, now, yeah. Like, I'm picturing that. And, like, especially, like you said, how a little earlier before all that stuff went down and a little closer to when Mortal Kombat was bigger, like, that would have been awesome, man.
Yeah, and the way it was always pitched to us was that, of course, I was going to come out first, like, just put one person out there, but quickly after that would be Canyon, and then, of course, Wrath or would be with him, and then all of a sudden, Ernest would be with her. So it was, I mean, it was going to happen really quickly, but for some reason, they decided, let's wait on, let's put the Glacier out there, and let's stretch it more. For some reason, they changed the pace of it. At least that's what I was kind of led to believe.
That's hilarious, Robbie, because think about this. It was supposed to be Glacier and then Mortis and then Ernest and then Wrath. And it turned out instead it was Scott Hall and then Kevin Nash. Yeah. I think that Glacier was supposed to be in the original NWO. And then when the NWO broke out as a faction, you couldn't do it twice. So they had to go back to the drawing board.
Exactly.
If you're a wrestler, Robbie, what is it like for you when something you're doing has to go back to the drawing board like that?
I mean, you know, it's you just kind of take it and you got to just constantly say to yourself, it is what it is. And when you're in a position where you're still getting paid and, you know, you're still part of the company, I mean, you got to understand that's pro wrestling. I mean, that's show business in general. Things happen. Things change last minute. You just got to go with the flow. The important thing is to have a positive attitude about it and just, you know, not make a big, depending what position you are in the company, not make a big stink about it, you know?
And that's what, and really, I'll tell you, I mean, this was a very rare situation for us was, you know, you have your, I don't care where, whatever career you're in, you have your cliques, you know, and your factions and things like that, that everybody, the groups that you hang out in, you know, ours was, you know, we were all the friend, we literally, our group was called the FOP, Friends of Page. And so we had, we actually, I forget who came up. I think Kane.
I want to be an FOP, man. I'm going to be part of that.
And, I'm guessing the person who came up with it was the P, was Diamond Dallas Page.
Yeah. Yeah,
it's Matt. You'll never be an FOP.
Never, ever.
So, you know, we had Paige really pushing for us because Paige knew how hard we were working. I mean, every day when we weren't on the road, we were down at the power plant. We were working our butts off. I mean, still training hard, and that was just that was what was expected when we agreed to that deal. And so, you know, so we were doing everything in our power to say, okay, this is, you know, this is kind of what it's turned into. And I tell you, for me, it was a great experience for me because, of course, you know, I have fans come up to me and say they absolutely loved the gimmick. There's people that out there that absolutely hated it. It was my first time in the real world as a young man because I'd had a lot of experience. I mean, a lot of good things happened to me in my career. I'd had challenges and stuff, but I had never had something like that where some people absolutely hated the gimmick. They hated it.
Well, you know what? Here's the thing about it. Like, love it or hate it, I'll tell you, and it's being myself a fan in those years, it's definitely memorable, which is the most important thing, right? Everybody that watched wrestling then remembers Glacier. So whether you liked Robbie, or hated it or whatever, who cares? Right. They remember it, you know?
Well, you know, and I appreciate you saying that, man. I really do. But you're right. You know, the thing is that's why I tell all young wrestlers, man, the one word you need to make sure that's in your vocabulary is memorable. That's what you want to be memorable, and you're not going to please everybody. And for me, it was a huge turning point in my life because, and I was just thinking about this recently, really dissecting it. It was the first time in my life where, you know, as it's happening, the people who would be in the critics of it, I'm realizing, okay, they're not attacking me, they're attacking the gimmick, you know, but still, you know, hey man, those verbal arrows and spears can hurt, you know. I needed that at that point in my life. I needed something to kind of bump me down a little bit and say, hey, it ain't all sunshine and rainbows, kid. You know?
let's talk about the gimmick just a little bit. You know, you finally debuted. You debuted on Pro against the Gambler, but your real debut was against Bubba on Nitro. We had, you know, we had snowflakes coming out of the sky. You had your costume. You had the contact lens. You had blue lighting during the whole match. Yeah. So much went into the presentation, and they started tinkering with it, changing it immediately.
Yeah.
Did you feel the reception in the back and the reception out front was disappointing, considering all the work that was put into it?
Well, you know, here's the thing, man. The fans seemed to really, really respond to it because it was something totally different. You know, fans always – I don't ever remember the fans – crapping on it. Yeah, they always seem to respond, and a lot of it was they were just responding to something different. I understand that. But the funny thing is that just goes to show you what I consider the misorganization, disorganization, whatever you want to call it, of WCW. That match with the Gambler was never supposed to air then. But they weren't supposed to air until after the Nitro debut. Because let's face it, I mean, yeah.
It makes no sense at all. It makes no sense.
Makes no sense.
And, wait a minute, real quick. Let me just catch up to what you guys are saying. So a Saturday night match, random match, aired before your Nitro debut?
Oh, worse, Robbie. Worse than that, it was a Sunday night pro match, which is our most generic show.
Yeah, I remember Sunday night. Oh,
it was Sunday night pro. I don't know how it made it into the lineup, but somehow it did. Obviously, it wasn't meant to really run. At least that's the way I was told. When we were putting everything together, they were like, oh, we're building to this big debut on Nitro. I mean, why would they throw a match on there before Nitro?
It's Glacier's coming, Glacier's coming, Glacier's coming. Oh, wait, Glacier was here Sunday. Now Glacier's here.
Right, yeah, on WCW Pro, which was the most generic show we had. There's a lot I've learned about that since then that it's not worth going into now. But you know, it's one of the things where I go back and I go, is it any wonder WCW is out of business?
Well, it's good. So many people say how unorganized the Impact and TNA is and was throughout the years. And then if you really think about it, you go back. And I mean, God, wrestling, WCW had a lot of problems with unorganization, too.
Yeah.
And you could hire your kid's karate teacher over a steak dinner to a 3-year contract.
That's right. That's right. And I will say this, because as a matter of fact, I actually talked to Ernest today. We've remained great friends over the years. Now, I will say, if you know, Ernest went on to have a great career in WCW and had a pretty good run in WWE.
Of course, Ernest Miller did well enough that when he did his WWE run, it didn't even have anything to do with karate. It had to do with his talking.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
But the Glacier character was all about karate and all about the kicks. And after they actually brought in James Vandenberg, they brought in Mortis, they brought in Wrath, Ernest Miller came. Everything may have gotten watered down. And then Glacier started getting in these little feuds. You had a little mini feud with Chris Adams over the super kick.
Yeah.
You had a feud with Saturn over the super kick.
Yeah.
But your finisher changed over years. You went through 3 or 4 different finishers. Can you talk about why you changed your finishers so often?
Yeah, Terry Taylor is someone who I went to a lot throughout my career. And Terry's the kind of guy, you know, there's people that, you know, that love Terry and some that don't necessarily love Terry because he can be brutally honest. And that never bothered me. It bothers a lot of people, but it never bothered me. And, you know, Terry just gave me a lot of good advice along the way. And when the point where I turned on Ernest and I became, you know, I had to run as a heel, he basically said, well, look, you know, why don't you come up with something a little different? And that's when he came up. He helped me, you know, figure out to come up with, you know, just basically the Asiatic Spike, or I call it the Ice Pick or whatever. It's just something different because of supposedly this change in attitude, you know, blah, blah, blah.
You went through all these different finishers. You have gotten to a point now where maybe things aren't going as well as they were. On November 22nd, you had your last pay-per-view match as Glacier at World War III against Wrath. And then at that point, even though he came back a little bit later, it seemed like the Glacier run was over. You became Buzz Stern. But let's talk about the Glacier thing. How did you find out it was over? Who told you? And how did you feel at the time?
I tell you what, it's a great lesson in being proactive. I knew the booking committee, you know, was changing. I knew there were some people that were coming onto the booking committee that weren't big fans of the Glacier gimmick as a whole. Not it wasn't any personal against me. They were ready to move on, you know, because we were in the.
Who was on the booking committee at the time?
And there were a couple of people, but I don't want to say their names because I don't have any ill will towards them. But you know, it was just, you know, let's face it. They you know, it was more, everything was that more, oh, everything needs to be as real as possible. And, you know, the whole attitude era and everything is NWO was just taken over. And, but they basically, you know, it had run its course, and we were, you know, Canyon and I constantly giving them ideas to do stuff with us. But it was just a point where they were tired of hearing it. They wanted to move on. So it wasn't so much that we're killing off Glacier and we're not, you know, we're doing away with that. It was just like, we're not going to renew your contract was basically what it was. I still want to be a part of this company though, you know? And so,
hell
you know,
yeah. Yeah.
Good. Yeah. What can I do? So I had spent all my own money, got these vignettes. I had everything ready, but they were edited. I mean, I knew this day would be coming. So I go in and I knew Eric had a TV and a VCR in his office. And I said, I walked in and he said, he was busy as always. He just says, Ray, he says, I know why you're here. He said, just understand, you know, it's just, you know, this happens. It's time to move on. You know, and I said, Eric, I get it. I said, I just need you to do me a favor. I said, I just need 5 minutes of your time. Can you watch this VHS tape for me? Just watch this tape. And he goes, what is it? I said, just watch. It'll be, I can explain it a lot better. And because I had talked to him a little bit about it, you know, before that. But and he slid it in. He stood there with his arms crossed. He watched the 8 vignettes, which were all about 30 seconds, you know, to 60 seconds apiece. And literally, when it was finished, he pushes the thing, hands the tape back to me. And he goes, okay, you're rehired. And he goes, I like this. He goes, because I can tell you this, because I can't pay you Glacier money. I'll never forget him saying that. And I said, whatever. I just want to be a part of the team. And he says, okay, my first paycheck comes in the mail. It was literally maybe $200 difference from what I was making with Glacier.
Wow.
So I was like, all right, I'll live with this. You know,
lot of people not only wouldn't have had the balls to do that, they wouldn't have thought to be prepared to make a new character up and like do that. You know, they just kind of would be like, well, they don't want me, I'm gone. You know, like that's right. Awesome that right. You were smart enough. And like you said, proactive to just get it going.
Well, you know what, Robbie, and I really, like I said, man, I appreciate you saying that. I mean, I knew when we talked back a couple months ago, I could tell we were very like-minded anyway. I was amazed that you and I had not crossed paths before that, you know, and the same thing happened when the booking committee changed again, not long after that, not even a year later. And that's when Terry Taylor came back to me and said, hey, you know, they're done with the Buzz Stern thing. How about you come back as Glacier? And I'm like, Jesus, will y'all make up your minds?
Yeah, right.
but that's when I did the thing, which was very short-lived, but it's one of the things that people remember the most is when I did the thing with Norma Smiley, where I would come out to the ring to try to help him, but I'd always get there too late, and I was.
Turning Glacier into a comedy gimmick was probably a last gasp for Glacier, and it was definitely a last gasp for WCW. And you're a guy who had 10 years of experience before you came in. You were pushed to the moon. It was kind of stagnated. It fell off. You're rehired a little bit. So let's ask you the question, because that's the name of the show. Why did it end?
You know, for me personally, it was you know, the Attitude Era was such a different world, and it just didn't fit into that world, you know. And the Attitude Era is became one of the most memorable times of wrestling work for WCW and WWE. Everything was becoming very you know quote unquote real, and that gimmick, in my opinion, just didn't seem to fit into the majority of what the show was about at that point, which was, you know, everything was all, you know, everybody was going by their real names, and the gimmicks, you know, that had worked in the 80s and the early part of the 90s, all of a sudden it was a non-gimmicky time, so to speak. And then
it was more about realism.
Yeah, the realism that was supposedly, you know, what wrestling was going to. I tell you, people look at it, and you know, one thing I've always just promised myself is I'll never become a bitter old wrestler, because it's always what Dallas, one of the things I learned from Dallas is life is 90% of how you react to it. And I look at myself and I go, you know what? I had a chance. I was a solid member of one of the greatest rosters of all time during arguably the greatest period of wrestling of all time. Most of the people I talk to these days and over the years were fans of the gimmick for some reason or another. The ones that were critics of it, I get it. I totally get it. You know, and it's like, you know, Matt, I told you this when we were talking the other day. I say to people all the time, you know, you're breaking wrestling. You never know how it's going to come or when it's going to come. And I always say, do you ever think I ran around imagining my breaking wrestling would come with me wearing a blue mask and armor? Hell no.
after a private steak dinner with Eric Bischoff, which, by the way, did he pick up the bill for that? I hope.
You know what? It's so funny. I can't remember, but I'd like to think that he did.
I bet he left a big tip.
I can't remember. I was so nervous.
So now, you know, it's years later. It's 2018. What does Glacier do now?
Well, you know, recently I just opened a professional wrestling school called the One Fall Power Factory in Atlanta, Georgia. I've had the great fortune of learning from some of the best in the business. I feel a moral obligation to pass that along. I really do.
How many students do you currently have? You have a lot of students?
Yeah, we've got about, right now, we've got about, you know, 12 to 15 regular students that are paying and coming, you know, every week. We purposely have not done a big, huge launch. We're getting ready to do that here probably over the summer. Cool. So, you know, we quietly opened up, you know, and
time I'm in the Atlanta area, for sure, I'm going to let you know, because I'd love to come check out your school.
Robbie, I'll tell you, man, you got to come see it, because it is, I mean, it almost sounds like I'm lying when I'm saying this, but it's 43,000 square feet, world-class sports training facility that we have full access.
And your students get to use everything?
They get to use everything. We actually have awesome, it set up, man. And it puts us in a world-class facility where we hopefully can, you know, can help, you know, educate and train the new generation of wrestlers that are coming through.
Well, there's nothing we like more on Why It Ended than a story that it didn't end, that it's got a happy ending. And
yeah,
and this is our first episode, and it's a great episode, someone we all remember, and we think maybe he just dropped off the face to earth. What happened? He's got a giant wrestling school. Glacier, Ray Lloyd, if people want to attend your school or reach out to you, how can they get a hold of you?
Yeah, it's called, the girls are going, we've got a web designer putting our website together right now. Just on Facebook's probably the easiest way. It's just One Fall Power Factory. And we got Sean Waltman coming in this weekend. He's doing a one-day seminar. And then in 2 weeks, we got Abyss coming in. Next month, we've got Billy Gunn coming in. So, you know, and Ernest, I was talking to Ernest Miller today. Ernest is going to start coming in and training there just to get some of the ring rust off. Cody Rhodes and his wife, they come and train at our facility some because they just recently moved back to Atlanta. So it's one of those things where you never know who's going to walk in the door, you know, at our facility to, you know, as far as our trainees. So I'm trying to create a really, one, like I always say, a really good supportive environment for people who want to chase this dream of being a professional wrestler. And one of the best lessons that Dusty ever taught me is that, and I'm sure that you guys can relate to this, is that sometimes that there are people out there that they need the wrestling business a lot more than it may need them right now. You know, maybe they turn into somebody great at some point, but they need to belong to a good supportive group of people, a good environment, a good safe place to land. That's equally why I do this, because I want to have that environment.
Hey, man, well, thank you very much. You were the perfect first guest, and I'm excited to get the feedback from everyone, because I'm pretty sure, like, everyone is going to be entertained by your story. I certainly was listening to it, and I just think a lot of people don't know it and don't know your background, and they're going to be very surprised when they hear all of this. So what about you yourself?
Well,
are you still taking wrestling bookings, like, actively? If people want to reach out to you, where could they find you?
Yeah, actually, I am. I'm booked the next 2 weekends, Friday and Saturday, throughout Georgia, actually. But yeah, through one through the Power Factory, you know, Facebook site, they can just send a message there. But they can look me up on Facebook. Just my personal page is Ray Lloyd. I love the business. I hope the business will allow me to be a part of it until my dying day, because I love it that much. I really do.
Well, you're definitely a part of it, and thank you for being a part of our very first show. Glacier, we finally found out why it ended. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, guys. I really appreciate it. It's a big honor for me to be the first guest. Thank you.
Take care, man.
Robbie, what an interview. And we finally found out why it ended. We learned a lot about Glacier, didn't we?
Hey, you know, I've been in wrestling 18 years, and I still, like, guys from when I was a fan that I watched, I think back to them, and I never would have thought the Glacier that I watched was the Glacier that I just talked to. Like, he's the nicest. He was such a nice dude.
He's the nicest guy ever, and I hope that I can have that positive attitude after going through something that had to be pretty terrible.
Yeah, I feel like my phone's going to be ringing tomorrow, and it's going to be him, or there's going to be a knock on my door, and he's going to want to, like, hang out and keep telling his story to me. You know what I mean? Like, he's such a nice guy. He's awesome. It was awesome. I hope he does.
He's going to be like, Robbie, I baked some cookies. Do you want to hang out?
Yeah. Like, come on, man. You're supposed to be mean or something. I don't know. But no, that was, I learned a lot. And I put it this way. I just learned a lot. I think everyone listening is saying, had a few holy shit moments where they said, wow, I didn't know that about him or that era or WCW or how it went down. So, like, that's the point of this show. And that's why I'm so excited about it. Because, like, a lot of people, you know their stories. I'm glad we're going to have guests on where you don't know their stories.
Absolutely. And I think that we are onto something here. I think this is something that people are going to like. We're really happy to bring it to you. Robbie, thank you for bringing me this idea. What kind of guest would you like to have in the future?
I think we got to keep that a secret, because I know me and you have talked about some that we have lined up. But I think each week it's going to just be a surprise when we pop the name out to the fans. And see, you hear that, guys? That's what's going to keep you coming. And we promise you that we have a lot of awesome guests lined up that are going to have stories that you're going to want to hear.
And of course, we are Why It Ended. You can find our show at whyitended.com or listen on iTunes. You subscribe. Give us a 5-star rating. You can find us on Twitter at Why It Ended and Instagram at Why It Ended. Robbie, if people want to get a hold of you or talk to you, how do they do that?
Twitter at Robbie E Impact. My Instagram is Real Robbie E. And then, of course, my official website is robbie-e.com. And again, yeah, please tweet me, tweet Why It Ended, tweet Matt. We want to hear your feedback. this show is for you guys. You know, we want to keep improving it, and it's really going to be something special moving forward.
Come along on the ride with us, guys. Interact with us, follow us, and make sure to tell everybody about Why It Ended with Robbie E.
The world of MLW Radio never stops.